You're listening to episode 253 of the 200 Churches Podcast.
I go to these conferences and I listen to the pastors that are doing amazing work. You know, they're doing great work, and I want to learn from them or I wouldn't be there. But one of the things that they talk about all the time is, you know, if I'm showing up at your bedside in the hospital, then you're probably in your last couple of breaths, right?
Yeah,
because
exactly. They
don't have the time to be there. And so there are other people doing that work. But, you know, there's a reason why we went into ministry. And for me anyway, it wasn't just to preach every week, although I find that important. What I wanted to do in ministry was be in people's lives, you know, to be a part of those life and death moments that they have. It would be really hard to do that if I tripled or quadrupled in size, you know?
So you're saying it's okay to just be a shepherd?
I think it is. I think it's important.
Welcome to the 200 Churches Podcast, where every Wednesday we produce a legit episode of ministry encouragement for pastors of small churches. Now, here are two guys who have been encouraging thousands of pastors all around the world for almost 5 years. Good friends, pastors, and podcast partners, Jeff and Johnny.
This is the 200 Churches Podcast. My name is Johnny Craig, and I am here with my good friend and colleague,
Jeff Cady. Good to see you, Johnny. So good to be with you.
I've shortened what I say at the beginning. I could go on and on and on. I could use all my eloquent words and just talk about your credentials and the amazing things you've done, but everybody knows you now. You're Jeff. It's fine.
Hey, thanks. Hey, I literally wrote the foreword to Dave Jacobs' latest book, and he showed me the... Did I tell you about this, Johnny?
No!
I didn't tell you.
That's amazing!
I didn't tell you. So Dave Jacobs' new book, and at the bottom, it, right behind the UPC thing, right? At the bottom it says, "Foreword by Jeff Cady."
It does not. You
it
have
does.
Your name on a book.
I think it's extra big font, too.
Oh, my God. I love it.
Right
I love it.
Right
oh
behind
my goodness.
The bar. The Cady is right behind the barcode, though, at the bottom. But my name is on the
book.
Yeah, that's right. So, hey, listen, we can't goof around too much because a pastor in Sioux Falls had the nerve to tell me that our intros, where we just kind of guffaw and goof around, are like 20 minutes long.
Was it Zach?
No. I'm not going to name Tyler Ramsby from Registration Church or Recreation Church. What is it? Retroactive Church? I can't remember the name.
I pray that it's Recreation Church.
No, Tyler is the young pastor of Renovation Church in Sioux Falls.
Well, if he's young, why is he so grumpy like an old man?
I don't know.
Tyler, this is what we do.
I told him. So get this. Tyler and I talked last night on the phone, had a nice long conversation. But I told him, I said, Tyler, for saying that, I am going to throw you so hard under the bus on the next episode. It's not even going to be funny. So, Tyler, that one was for you.
We'll get to it quicker today, but I will say, I've been listening to more podcasts, Jeff. I really have. I'm growing up now. And our podcast, would you rather listen to us joke around, or would you rather listen to like 6 commercials, or us talk about our upcoming book tour, or us talk about our upcoming speaking tour? Okay, we have fun. We have a little bit of fun, a little bit of levity. I could tell you that JotForms is the fastest way to make your business run better. I mean, but we don't do that.
Yeah, but
so
you know what, Johnny?
Hush up. This is our commercial, is us having fun.
But we don't make any money, Johnny, cash on the barrel head.
You know what I know? Those commercials are about 30 seconds. You know that little fast forward button on your podcast
Oh, I know,
player?
Right? Right?
That's why it's at 30 seconds, baby. I ain't listening to your garbage commercials.
And some of them, I do the 2-minute one. I'll hit the 2-minute one twice on some of those podcasts, right? So, that is true. You make a good point, though. You make a really good point. We don't waste time trying to sell stuff. So we just have a good time because we're just a
couple jamokes.
But we're just two jamokes who happen to be pastors. So hey, today, classic episode, huh? Classic.
Yeah, man, I love it.
Tell our listeners what you knew about our guest 2 seconds before we started recording.
This is classic because it's classic Jeff. Jeff gets this guy.
I don't know this guy.
I don't know. Who's this guy? His name is Chad. Hey, Chad. What's up, Chad? Jeff's going to make a joke because you're bald, Chad. And now I'm looking at you, and I don't know you from Adam. And I'm getting no like messages here about who you are. And Jeff is like, let's record. And I'm like, dude, I just went for it. So, and it was great. It was great. It was a classic episode. Chad does a great job. I almost feel like I shouldn't spoil it for people because it was, I got to hear it for the first time ever. But he was a great guy. He had a lot of really, I felt like really interesting things to say.
He did.
And he has beautiful vision for small churches. He does not believe that small churches should do less or should be less. And I think that's pretty sweet.
So Chad exemplifies what we really want to be true for a small church pastor. So, right, he comes into our podcast, right? We've been doing this for 5 years. We've been talking to pastors like ad nauseum and ministry leaders all around the world. He comes in, and he's in a church of a little over 100, and he lays out such a heart and passion for the ministry of the small church that it's just so encouraging. And like you said, he shared a few things that, man, I wrote them down. I've already brought it up, one of the things up with one of our church leaders here. So, Pastor, don't ever think that the size of your church somehow is a lid on the breadth of your impact, because it isn't at all. And Chad does a great job. But I met him because when I came to town, I told my administrative assistant, I want to meet the other pastors in town. I want to meet all of them. So get them on my schedule for lunch meetings or whenever I can get with them. And Chad is like pastor number 6 of like 30, right, that I need to connect with. And he was so good. I said, hey, Chad, you got to come over to my house. You've got to go into the luxurious and opulent podcast studio, and you have to record with us. And he's like, yeah, sure, I'd love to. I said, have you ever done anything like that before? He's like, no. I'm like, okay.
Well, but he teaches preaching, and he talks a little bit about that at the end. So he knows how to get up in front of people. Here you have to pretend there's people. But, you know, he knows how to get up in front of people and talk and speak, and that comes through. I mean, he holds his own. And it's a great time. So let's get out of the way, man. Let's get out of the way and get to our conversation with Chad.
So I am here in the opulent and luxurious 200 Churches Sound Studio with my newfound friend,
Chad Jennings.
Chad, welcome to the 200 Churches Podcast Studio.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
This is luxurious and opulent, is it not?
And freezing.
And freezing, Johnny.
Yes, Chad. Thank you. What is wrong with that man that he likes his room's meat locker temperature? It's terrible. He thinks he's Rocky Balboa.
Well, hey, you know, you just got to dress warmer. You know, I was going to tell you. In fact, I was going to bring a heater in here to warm this up a little bit. I mean, it looks like it's 42 in here. I mean, that's, you know, it's not freezing.
I already feel loved.
Technically, it's not freezing. Okay. Well, hey, Johnny, Chad is a pastor here in this new town that I found myself in. In fact, this new town called Newton, right?
Yep.
And so I'm getting to meet the other pastors in town, and I met Chad. So, Chad, tell us a little bit about yourself, what church you're in, maybe how long you've been in ministry, a little bit about your family.
I'm a United Methodist pastor, and I've been in ministry about 15 years. This is church number 3 for me. And I've been here since July, so I'm a newbie in town just like you. I'm married, been married for 20 years to my wife, Wendy. Have 2 children, Nathan and Abby, who are both in high school.
Very cool. So United Methodist Church in town. I'm glad you're only there since July so you don't already have bad blood with Jeff. He tends to engender that among pastors in the area. So I'm glad that you don't have any of that already.
Well, it's still early.
See, that's why I have to go after the new guys, right? The new guys
don't
in
know.
Town. Right. So, Chad, we got together and we visited for a little while in your church, and you talked about a couple things that I want to kind of draw out of you.
Because
number one, you showed me your church building, and your church building is just classic small church. Tell us just a little bit about your services, how many people come, and then I suppose you can morph into why you're in that church.
Yeah, so it's a typical small church, like you said. It's been around since the late 60s. We've got 2 services. We meet at 8 and 10:30. The first service is somewhere between 45 and 50 people, and the second service is 85 to 90 people. So, you know, we're typically, depending on the Sunday, between 120 and 130 in worship.
So if I had a church of 125, you're telling me that I could actually have 2 services in my church?
Well, for us, we kind of have to. Our sanctuary only holds about 110 people. And, you know, you get to that 80% maxed out feeling, we would be there in our second service almost all the time. And so we have to have two in order to accommodate the number of people we have. But on the other hand, we also have some very distinct personalities in each one. And there are people who definitely want to go to the 8 o'clock, and there are people who definitely want to go to the 10:30. And very rarely do they switch over. You know, if you're looking, even in a small church, you might think that it'd be too much work, but I think we need menu options. People don't just go and order the same thing. Everybody order the same thing in the restaurant. We like to have menu options, and so that provides that for our people.
So, Chad, you're talking about the 80%, you know, idea. Can you unpack that for us a little bit? We have about 500 seats in my sanctuary auditorium space, whatever you want to call it. We're doing like 300, you know, maybe 350 people on a Sunday. So are we gonna, you know, what are you telling me about this 80%? Is it time to split and do two services? I'm not sure that I'm familiar with this.
It's certainly time to start thinking about it. If you're at 350, you're about 50 people away from your 80% rule. It just is that people will have told, I don't know who the person who did the survey about this was. It was most likely Barna, because they do all of that stuff, right? But they have asked people, when does it feel like this church is too full for me to come? And usually people feel pretty comfortable if it's at 80%. But if you go much higher than that, then people start to feel like the church is really, really full. They won't miss me. I have a hard time finding a seat. You know, people like their space. They don't want to sit right next to somebody they don't know. And so when you get to about 80%, it's time to start thinking about another option.
So 80%, you've got four people and an empty seat, and then four people and an empty seat. Really, that's pretty full, because you...
Pretty tight, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are whole rows, you know, the first row or two, often nobody sits in there. So, yeah, that 80% rule, that's pretty interesting. So, you say your auditorium holds like 110, mm-hmm. So that's about 220. So, you need to get to about 160 or 70, maybe. And that would be if both filled evenly at 80%.
Right, and they don't.
And they don't. So you could actually think about starting a third service with only 150 people.
Yeah, so when I came, one of the things they told me they wanted me to do was to start adding some contemporary music, or to do a contemporary service. And so the talk at the time was, which one of these services is going to change? Is my service going to change? I couldn't tell you right now that one would be a better option to change than the other, because there are people who like it exactly the way it is in each service, and there are people who would want something different in each service. But I can tell you right now that it would be really difficult for me to do that at the numbers that we have. In order to grow, we would need to add a third service rather than try to change one of the other two. And it's because that second service is almost at 80% right there. The first service, we got lots of room to grow, but I don't see that one growing at the same rate that our second one does.
I think that you're sitting in a complex situation that maybe a lot of our listeners are finding themselves in, where, you know, you're in a situation where people want a contemporary service. I think culturally a contemporary service might be an easier entry point for younger families, whatever, you know, the people that you want to fill up your church, blah, blah, blah. But you're in the situation where it's like, which one of these is going to change? So we're going to launch, you know, potentially launch a third service. And then you have the stressors of, well, am I just going to dilute the number of people I have over three services, or is this actually going to be a draw? And on top of that, I mean, you're talking about two services done by one worship team, a third service done by another worship team, presumably, and you're preaching three messages. I don't know how long you preach, Chad, but I don't have much voice left after two messages. So that's a hairy situation in a lot of ways.
It is, and actually a couple things about that. So first off, I think that change by addition is often an easier way to go than having to change what people already know. And so that would be one pro for adding a third service. People are willing to take on something else rather than have what they love changed. And so that's one of the reasons I would look at that. Another one is because I think we do need menu options. I probably wouldn't do that third service on Sunday morning. You know, we know that Sunday morning is the time that most people think, this is when I want to go to church. But there would have to be some real tight margins to add a third service on Sunday morning. and it wouldn't offer a separate menu option for folks who happen to be out of town on Sunday or their kids are in sports on Sunday. So I'd probably do something actually during the week. And the night of the week probably doesn't make that much difference in my context. Thursday would probably be the one that I would do because that's the night that's most open at this point. You know, I wouldn't jump into that without really looking into it and making sure that was the one that was going to work the best.
I like that answer, and I like the way you're thinking about it, because I think as small churches, sometimes we pigeonhole ourselves. Well, I know we've been doing Sunday morning services forever. I know how we've been doing Sunday morning services. But you're talking about some pretty revolutionary changes, right? Going from two services to three services, which is not something that a lot of people in, I mean, what do you tell me, like 150-member church are thinking about. But then also saying, well, hey, let's go opt for a different day completely, opt for a different time frame, day, night, whatever, for the service. I think that shows a beautiful forward thinking that sometimes we as small churches don't have. Do you think that's fair, Jeff? I think sometimes the small churches, we believe, well, we are these things that culture tells us we are, and we can't be on the front edge of these things, like you know, the mega church down the street, they have staff and volunteers and blah 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 blah. But what I'm hearing Chad say is like, hey, let's we can do stuff too. We you know, and we want to be here and be a place where people can meet with Jesus, and that looks a lot of different ways.
Well, if I thought of it, I don't remember thinking of what you said. You talked about change by addition. You're not actually changing the existing services, but you're adding another worship service, which I think is simply genius. I mean, it's pretty simple, right? But it's also something we often think, okay, so if we're going to change our church, we have to change what we have now. Yeah, but what if we did offer another alternative, another service with a different complexion to it than what the first service has or the first two services have? I'm going to keep that one in my back pocket because I really like that. And also this idea of people's schedules being so busy, even on a Sunday morning. Normally people would think about a Saturday night service. Why would you think Thursday and not Saturday?
Well, it wasn't that long ago that my kids were involved with stuff on the weekends. And of course, we told them that Sunday morning is Sunday morning and we're going to go to church. Right. You know, they would want to go and be parts of soccer tournaments or basketball tournaments. Well, watching all of his friends and his teammates go do that, they're out Saturday night too. It does not give a viable choice or a different option to families like that if that's who you're trying to target. You know, I've been involved in Saturday night services before, and they have a very loyal following, right? You'll have the same 30 people that'll come to that service, and they'll be there every week. But you're probably not going to get others to pull into that time frame, or they would do it. So for me, I'd want to do something completely different. I'd want to think about it in a fresh way. And so in order to do that in a fresh way, then you need to do something that is not in people's typical radar. To do something during the week would give that option. Of course, you're going to run into, you know, other busyness that happens during the week. But I think if you're going to have busyness happen all the time, then choose something that would allow people to make a different choice if they wanted.
Reminds me of the old New Community Service that Bill Hybels used to have at Willow Creek. They used to do in fact, they did a Wednesday night and Thursday night because they couldn't fit them all on Wednesday night. So, Johnny, they would literally do the seeker-driven approach on the weekends, and it was just seeker-driven on weekends, and then the believers would have their discipleship time midweek at the New Community Service, and they'd have a Wednesday night and Thursday night identical services. And at some point, they decided to shut those down. I mean, a number of years ago. I'm not up on their philosophy and what their approach is. But to have something midweek, that's really not new. So you're saying a Thursday night, because if people are busy and they're working. This past weekend, one of my daughters-in-law was going to work all day Sunday, so her and my son went to church on Saturday night. They have a Saturday night service, so that worked for them. But if they were working the weekend and there was a Thursday night service, they would probably try to opt to go on a Thursday night.
Yeah, or if they were visiting family or if their kids have something going on. You know, usually that'll take the whole weekend. And so then the Saturday night is not a good option for somebody who's gone the whole weekend. Plus, you know, it depends on who you're trying to attract to that service too. People are busy on Saturday nights. You know, they go out, they see a movie, or they go to a restaurant or something. That's, you know, that's a date night for a lot of people. So, I would think trying to do something at another time would be the way to do that.
So, Pastor, you got to decide with the leadership in your church to sit down and talk through that. Because I was thinking, Chad, I was thinking about a Sunday night. You know, Sundays are kind of, you know, a little bit set aside, and Sunday night might be free for people that more than a Thursday night. But then again, it's all about context. It's all about your community and the workflow of your community and when people are free and when they're not free.
Yeah, so to think about having to or getting to add a new service, you got to think through time, night of the week, what your format is, but you also got to get enough of your people to be committed to it. And they've got to think of this as a ministry. And maybe they're showing up to that service in addition to the service that they're normally show up to, the one that they call them. Their own, so that you can have enough people there to feel like you've got that critical mass that it takes to really feel like you're in a worship space. You know, you can worship 20 in a living room and it'll feel really full and it'll feel like a critical mass. But if you're in a bigger room, even our small sanctuary, that would not feel like enough to really feel like this is something that would keep me coming back. So you got to get enough people to be committed to doing this for a long period of time. Of course, inviting people as well. It'll take months probably of talking about this before we would be ready to launch.
And so people might serve in one service and come as a worshiper in another service.
Yeah.
So they'd be involved in two services. And you'd kind of need that, wouldn't you? I mean, if you're talking about three services, you're pretty much going to need people to come and worship in one and then serve in another.
Yeah, I think that'd be critical. I also think, I didn't think about it in the way that you were talking about with leading at one and worshiping at the other. I think that that would provide for whoever does that an opportunity for some joy that maybe they wouldn't have otherwise, to say, you know, I now lead all the time in my band or whatever I'm doing. I don't get to worship anymore. That's one of the things that sometimes pastors talk about, not being able to worship in their own service, and just to be able to go someplace and worship is a delight. Well, if people were doing that, serving at one and worshiping at the other, then they'd get both of those things.
So, Johnny, we're talking about, you know, the two services and how somebody might serve in one and worship in another. So you guys at your church, you're just one service on a Sunday morning, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
And so you haven't gone to that. And I've heard, though, that to add a second service there's a lot of complexity. It's a big step for a church. But then to add a third or even a fourth service is a lot easier because you've already gone through thinking outside the box and not expecting everything to be the same. Johnny, how hard do you think it would be for you guys to go to a second service?
Well, we have an interesting history here where we've contracted. So at one point, there were two services here. The way that the staffing situation was here, where the pastor was driving from one campus to the other to do the preaching, it became really untenable because the pastor was driving like back and forth twice. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Like one at this campus, one at this campus, one at this campus. Yeah. And it got to a point where it was a little, you know, that's a little crazy for a pastor to do. So they ended up contracting the service. But what I hear is people like the full feeling. Now, here's the problem. The people who belong might like the full feeling. But what about the people who are coming for the first time ever, right? Does it feel like they're being pushed out in some way? And we are, I mean, in our church, you talk about the front two rows. I mean, there's people in every row. I mean, the front row is the only row where there's not people usually. I mean, they're in there. So I think probably it's a conversation that is going to be happening eventually. And I think when I think about that conversation, the complexity all comes down to children's ministry.
It comes down to children's ministry?
Correct. That I think is the biggest, because it takes kids' ministry on a Sunday morning, takes so many volunteers to make it work. I mean, we have 130 kids coming through here on a Sunday morning through kids ministry. And so the number of volunteers it requires, the number of staff people involved with kids ministry. It's the highest staffed, you know, ministry in the church and things like that. And so I just hear Pastor Bep in my head as I'm thinking about two services, and she's saying, we need volunteer, you know, what about the volunteers and all this? So would it be hard? Absolutely, it would be. At some point, might we need to do it anyway? Absolutely. But yeah, those are tough questions to answer and to think about.
Chad, would you say that your church has the most staffing in the children's ministry department?
Yeah, I think even at our small level, you know, we have two Sunday school classes for kids and two Sunday school classes for adults. And I think at, even at that level, staffing that is probably the one that's the hardest to do just because of the sheer number of volunteers. But also you need the right ones in the right place. And so trying to do that, I think more than any other ministry, you got to think about it in those terms. I was thinking, what about parking for you? Is your parking lot full enough that you have to go to two services just to alleviate some of that traffic?
So truthfully, that's a huge issue too, because parking-wise, we don't have a gigantic lot here. I mean, we really don't. And it fills up. I think if we put 500 people in the auditorium, I think every spot's full in the parking lot. So on Sunday morning, you might have people driving around. We have a big field that we could park people as long as it's not raining or snowing, but I mean, there, it's a pinch. I mean, the parking issue is a pinch, and then the seating issue. If we grow much, we have two choices of buy more chairs, because we could seat, Jeff, you've seen it with the chairs, you could put more chairs out,
right.
You could seat more people
right.
in there, so you can buy more chairs, or you can create another service. I think most everybody would say buy more chairs first, because they're scared of the complexity of two services. And selfishly, I mean, I think I'd rather preach to a full room. If I'm on the worship team, I think I'd rather sing with a full room. You split the services, maybe, you know, you don't fill the room as well either. And I think there are people, maybe me included, I'm not sure, who that's part of the conversation as well, where it's like, do we want to take away that feeling of fullness?
And if it isn't a part of the conversation, it should be. Because I can tell you that preaching to a half-empty room takes a lot more energy on my part than preaching to one that's more full. I get a lot more energy back from the people when the room is more full, and it makes it easier to stay up at that energy level you need to in that space than it is in our first service, which has fewer people. You know, I'm glad we have that. And, you know, the people who are at the first service, if they all came to the second one, we'd have parking issues, we'd have seating issues. We really have to keep it at two. But personally, when I'm up front and I'm leading, it's much easier to lead when the room is more full.
Sure.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but you know, my motivation is intrinsic. It's really not extrinsic. So, I have a fire in my belly for the Word of God, brothers, and I don't need
Jeff,
all.
Jeff can't see in the dark, and they turn the house lights off when he's up there. So two people or 200 people, he couldn't tell the difference.
So, but I'm glad you guys admitted this, because I don't know. I think I might have been a little nervous about admitting it. But
he was complaining at lunch that when they take his picture off the screen, he gets a little disappointed.
That is a bold-faced lie.
I'm calling it out. That sounds like Jeff.
There you do have more energy when you've got more people.
Yeah,
it's true. But you're right though. If you had 20 people in a 100-seat auditorium, you'd have more energy if you met in a living room and you had 20 people stuffed in a living room.
Yeah.
You really would as
you
a
do.
Speaker. It's just something about that.
It's not the number of people.
No.
It's about the whole environment.
The capacity of the space.
Yep.
And how much. So, okay. So I don't know how we got off on this two services thing, but I think we brought up some good food for thought. I got some good food for thought. I got to imagine other pastors did. What I wanted to talk to you about, Chad, was when we walked around your building, you talked about how ministry happens in a smaller church. How in a church of 100, 200,
yeah.
there's a reality and there's an experience that's different from larger church, and that you intentionally came to this church knowing it was the size it was and not necessarily expecting to grow it to 500. you know, in 2 years either. So talk to us just a little bit about that.
You had mentioned that your heart for smaller churches, and I have one of those too. I used to want to, you know, preach in front of 800 people all the time, and I still like doing that when it happens, but it's hard to be in that many people's lives in an intimate way. You don't have the time to be able to meet that many people during the week, and so you get too much over 200. It's just impossible for you to be the only person who's in ministry with them, and it shouldn't be that way anyway, even in a small church. But to think that you know, there are enough people in Newton that we could grow and we could keep growing and have way more than just a couple hundred people. But I really think that there are people who like a bigger church and there are people who like a smaller church. They just feel like it's more of an intimate space and they can connect better. And I heard that over and over again from my own people when I came and started talking to them about what they loved about St. Luke. They kept saying that we've been to other churches, but they were bigger and we wanted something that was smaller. So I think there's a real need for churches that are of that smaller size, because not everybody is, you know, an extrovert and wants to greet that many people all the time. So for me, if this church were going to grow, and I think it will, I want to keep the services somewhere between 80 and 100 and have more of them rather than to, you know, try to build a bigger sanctuary and to get more people in each service at this point anyway. Now, that could change as we go on, but at least for now, I think that fits the culture of my people a lot more than a bigger space would.
I don't know, Johnny, what do you think? It sounds like Pastor Chad here and his church just don't care about the lost.
I think Pastor Chad cares deeply about people and wants to be involved in people's lives. You know, somebody asked me today how things are going here. And, you know, so adult attendance on Sunday was, I just had it in front of me, 331. That's, we're counting them, you know, it's 331. And I was just saying to my friends and colleagues over lunch that I don't know people's names. And I think I hurt a guy's feelings because he came up and said, hi. And I said, have we met? And he was like, yeah, it's me, Brian. I was like, oh crap. Like, I don't know who you are.
You never say, have we met, Johnny? Never have we met.
I'm done saying, have we met? So it's just hard. I mean, it's a difficult thing. I can't be in people's lives in the same way, or yeah, I think I can say this fairly. I can't be in people's lives, as many people's lives, in the same way as I was in Orange City. I just can't do it. Our last church, Jeff, I knew everybody there by name. I knew their kids' names. I don't think I will ever know everybody's name that's here. And so when I hear Pastor Chad say, well, I want to be involved in people's lives, what I hear him saying is, well, if he's involved in people's lives doing discipleship, maybe there's a greater chance that those people will go do discipleship. And maybe that's the best plan to get to the lost, is not to build a bigger auditorium for them to come listen to a speech. Although I love giving my weekly speech, I really do. I think a better way for people to hear the gospel or meet Jesus is when friends and people that they love and work with and understand and know come to them and say, hey, I love Jesus and you should too. Do you know what I'm saying? So when I hear Pastor Chad say, I want to be involved in people's lives, what I hear him say is, I want to help people live out their faith. I want to help people go into their workplaces and live out what, you know, what we call the boxes, Jeff, right? Loving relationships, loving service, and all
right,
this.
Right.
And I think it's a beautiful picture of what the church has been in its past and is currently today and will continue to be in the future. And sure, there's the big ones, you know, around, and that's fine too. We, you know, the good work happens. But small churches do important work, and pastors in small churches do important work life on life with people, and then that reaps kingdom benefits beyond the walls of the church.
So I hope, Pastor, that as you're listening, you can sense the affirmation coming your way in your church. Doesn't matter the size. And you know, Chad, I was reminded, I think it was last week or the week before, I visited with another pastor in town, and in her church, they have a total attendance of about 60. And she has two services. She has an early service and a later service. And they're like around 20 to 30 and 30 to 40. It's small. It's like half as big as yours. Mm-hmm. And it has two services because the people enjoy the opportunity of coming to one or the other. And I think they're a little bit more switchable. The people are. That they don't always come to the same one. Depending on the schedule of their day, they might go to one or another. But this pastor will do two services, and the auditorium is never full. It's not that big, but it's never really full. But she's doing good work in the lives of people, and that's the important thing that we all have to remember. And so I hope that you feel that affirmation, Pastor. So, Chad, talk with us as we kind of land this plane. Talk to us about what you're doing in training other pastors in preaching.
Oh, okay. I told you that one of the things that I love to do is to teach preaching and worship. In the United Methodist system, we have a couple of different entry points into full-time ministry or into paid vocational ministry. And one of those is the traditional route that many think of, which is, you know, go to college, go to seminary, and then go to church. But another one that we have simply by need is we have many, many churches and not nearly enough seminary-trained pastors. And so we fill them with what we call licensed local pastors. They're still educated. They still go to, it's a seminary, but it's done over a course of time. We call it course of study. Okay. They go four times a year and get trained. But in the meantime, they're serving churches. And so in order to get them started, we put them in a boot camp, if you will. It's a one-week, very intensive course on just how to navigate the life of the church. So they get administration, and they get pastoral care, and they get worship and preaching. And so
Johnny, you want to sign up for a week with me? You and I could go to one of those. We need a little refresher. Come on, it'd be fun.
My denomination's about to push me through all this stuff on this end already.
So. I'm sorry, Chad. Go ahead.
No, that's okay.
Go ahead.
So during this boot camp then here in Iowa, I get to do the team teach preaching and worship with another colleague. And it's just great to be able to pour into these people that I know are going to go to these small churches of 20 or 30 people. Sometimes it's more than that, but we have a lot of churches that are at that 20 people range that need pastors. And so these people are going to go serve faithfully these 20 to 30 people and love on them. And we want them to have high quality worship so that if, you know, life does take off in these little communities and people start coming to church, that they get fed in a way that honors them. And so, you know, I get the honor of doing that every year.
Johnny, get this. United Methodist Church in Iowa. Guess how many congregations are in Iowa?
Oh, man, there are so many United Methodist
See,
churches.
I did not know this. How many, Chad?
I think it's somewhere around 800.
That doesn't surprise. Honestly, it doesn't surprise 800. Me. Every town I go, every town you drive through in Iowa has got a United Methodist church, and they all look the same. They were all built in 1967, and they all look exactly the same. It's wonderful. You know it's a Methodist church when you drive by it.
A lot of them were, or before that. You know, back before Iowa even became a state, we started having United Methodist churches here in Iowa. And our goal when we came across the country was that there would be a church within an hour's wagon ride from all the farms in the community. So what that means in Iowa is at least one in every county, every 99 counties. Now, there's only one county way up by where you were in Orange City.
Lyon County.
Does not have a United Methodist church. But
I'm not surprised that if there's one county that doesn't have one, it's in Northwest Iowa.
Yeah, we are
not
neither.
Not surprising.
Pagans.
Yeah, right. Reformed.
The Reformed church just hollowed out that whole area, my friend.
Well, and they've done so well up there. That, I mean, really, yeah. It's not like we need another church up there. But yeah, we have 800 churches, and we have about 800 pastors. But it doesn't always come down to one pastor for one church. In fact, we have many that will have multiple pastors, but we also have many that one pastor serves, you know, four or five churches at a time.
Johnny, do you have anything else for Chad before I ask him for a parting shot?
Well, my only thought is about this preaching conversation, and that if Chad would be willing to come back another time and spend his whole time talking about that, I would enjoy it, because I'd love to hear what he's teaching pastors who weren't trained in homiletics or weren't trained in seminary or whatever it is, or like even me where I learned preaching on the fly, but, you know, from you, Jeff, and from my dad who was a preacher and things like that. So maybe people who don't have that kind of context, what you're teaching them about preaching. I think the art of preaching, now that I'm preaching more, Jeff, finally, I got out of Jeff's shadow and, you know, I can do my own thing.
It's a big shadow, man.
Now that I'm preaching more, I think about the art of preaching more than I ever have. So I would love to have that conversation, but we don't have time for it now. So I will move to the parting shot, but I am grateful for your time, Chad.
I think he is a candidate for the boot camp.
Come on. Is that a criticism? Is that supposed to be a criticism of my preaching?
No, I'm just being honest. You're humble. You're admitting your lack and what you need to learn and how much you need to grow. So no, that's good, Johnny. That's good.
It's true. Hey. The consistent feedback I get is, Johnny, you're a nice guy, very handsome, and terrible preacher. So I live with it. It is what it is.
And yet they still keep coming back. So
says good music.
So, Chad, speak to the small church pastor for a minute. The pastor out there who is feeling less than because of the size of their church and because of what is often in ministry circles, this drumbeat of grow your church, grow your church, grow your church.
Yeah, we have that too. You know, we're always looking at the metrics and we're always looking to see if in our denomination, if we're getting more baptisms and more professions of faith and are you growing and what's your worship attendance? And, you know, as if that is the only sign of life and health that happens in a church. But I would say that, you know, there are those pastors that are really well known and they're at big churches. But if you're looking across the landscape of the United States, those are much fewer and far between than the number of churches that we have out there who are in people's lives, that are a part of their families, they're part of the life and death situations that they're in. They're in those intimate moments. And I think that just because you're in a small church doesn't mean you're not doing ginormous ministry, right? And I think that that's far more important if you're talking about the numbers aggregate of people that we are in encounters with every day as compared to those who serve a big church. I go to these conferences and I listen to the pastors that are doing amazing work. You know, they're doing great work and I want to learn from them or I wouldn't be there. But one of the things that they talk about all the time is, you know, if I'm showing up at your bedside in the hospital, then you're probably in your last couple of breaths, right?
Yeah,
because they don't have the time to be there. And so there are other people doing that work. I think that is a great opportunity for them to, for those people who are involved in that, to do that work that the lead pastor can't. But you know, there's a reason why we went into ministry, and for me anyway, it wasn't just to preach every week, although I find that important. What I wanted to do in ministry was be in people's lives, you know, to be a part of those life and death moments that they have. And it would be really hard to do that if I tripled or quadrupled in size, you know?
So you're saying it's okay to just be a shepherd?
I think it is. I think it's important. The first churches were not hundreds and hundreds of people, right? It was one pastor with you know, a flock that was small enough that you could really disciple people. And I think that that's important. I think the work that we do every single day is important. There's nothing to be ashamed about, even if we can't all have 10,000 people in our church. We just can't all do that. And we're not all built that way either. And, you know, if God wanted that, it would happen. But I think God wants us to be planted in the ministry and grow where we're planted and to do whatever faithful work we can right where we are.
Very cool. Johnny, thanks for joining us today via Skype.
We're doing it
the old-fashioned way.
I know. It's a throwback episode. I think you got my replacement sitting right there, though. The 200 Churches podcast with Chad and Jeff. It's got a good ring.
I think
he brings a little liturgical flair out of that UMC background that I cannot bring, you know. He wears a robe sometimes. You see it. I mean, look at him. This man wears a robe.
Once a year.
Hey, there you go. That's it. Once counts. Once is enough.
That's right.
All right. Well, Chad, hey, thank you. Thank you for taking the time and for encouraging pastors.
It's my pleasure.
Well, Jeff, you've done this to me a lot of times. You've foisted a guest on me. This is our child, our baby, this podcast, and you just at random pull people off the streets and say, hey, this is Andrew Anderson, and he's going to be on the podcast. And then it's like, this is not the first time. And I, you know, I never know what to think. What's going to happen? I don't, you never know.
Have
and,
I ever and, failed you, Johnny?
And that's the thing, is you consistently do not fail. You have an eye for podcast guests, my friend. You find these people who yeah, aren't flashy, aren't sexy, whatever. He's got a United Methodist Church in Newton, Iowa.
Chad would like to disagree with the sexy part. No.
Okay, he's very sexy. Okay.
He's got the Telly Savalas haircut, so come on.
Not that again. So anyway, but, you know, he's just a guy, just like us. We're just guys. We have self-made ourselves into quote-unquote small church experts. We're not. We're just dudes. And Chad is just a dude. He's not on the speaker circuit, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But he comes on and shares his heart, shares his passion, shares his experience. And it was a really great conversation. It was a really great time. So kudos to you, Jeff. Kudos to you. And kudos to Chad, because he was a really great interview.
So Chad and I had lunch just before the interview, and he was telling me how in his church now, he's only been there like a month and a half longer than I have, that he is pushing decision-making down to the lowest level possible, and that some of the folks aren't used to that because the pastor who preceded him was a little bit more hands-on in terms of administrative stuff and decision-making.
Sure.
And so they're asking him questions, and he's saying, well, what do you think? And how? What do you think would be the best way? And what would you do if you were making the decision? And so that was really good to hear. So, yeah, kudos to Chad for leading well in his church, and also for being who he is with his people. He's not trying to repeat and be exactly like the pastor before him, but he's allowing the people to experience, you know, different leadership. And we will have a woman pastor back on our podcast soon. I have met with a couple women pastors here in Newton, Iowa. It's been delightful conversations about ministry and church world. One, and I don't know if I said this when we recorded with Chad, but one has, I think I did, two services with a total of like 60, 65 people.
Yeah, that's wild.
So you... Pastor, you can do whatever you want to do in your church, and you can think outside the box. And I really like what Chad said about just adding something different instead of changing what you have and making it different and ticking off everybody or forcing them to change.
Right, right.
Yeah, just add something new that's in a different format.
Chad's got the right ideas and clearly cares deeply about the church, the mission of the church. One of 800 United Methodist pastors in our state of Iowa, which is crazy.
That is crazy.
He's doing great work in Newton, Iowa, and I'm glad that you and him are sitting down and hanging out and getting lunch together. I said at one point on the podcast I had to walk across the street. Well, I'm not going to walk because it's like a quarter mile, but I had to get across the street to the other church that's in our neighborhood, and I actually ended up doing that, and I felt very good about myself and have never gone back. So anyway... My self-righteousness intact. I feel fine, but so, I am enjoying your pastor friends.
So like, so now did you meet the pastor?
I met some of the pastors. The head pastor was not around. He wasn't there.
Okay.
So I met the worship pastor. I met like the women's discipleship director. I met the adult ministries pastor, I think. So yeah, I met a handful of people over there. Cool. I mean, cool people.
So
they have bigger offices than I do. So I was jealous, a little
they
envy.
They all do, right?
Yes.
So I met with a pastor here in town whose name will not be shared. But this pastor believes very differently than me in a number of areas. And at one point, one of those areas came up in the conversation. And the pastor's face was just a little bit grief-stricken when they realized that my belief was not really what they believed in a certain area. But I was like, you know what, though? That's okay. That's okay. You're doing good ministry and good work here with people. You are serving the community. You're loving your people. And we just disagree on that. But, hey, we're pastors and we have churches in the community. We're going to support each other, cheer each other on. We're going to honor and respect one another. And I tell you what, the look on this pastor's face, it just kind of, it just softened, and By the time I was walking out, they were very pleased that we had that conversation. I know that they felt affirmed and encouraged. And
that's it, man. That's great.
There's a big chasm in between what I believe and what they believe and how my church does ministry, how their church does ministry. But you know what? They celebrate the Lord's Supper every single Sunday in their church. And they proclaim the death of Christ as, you know, efficacious to take our sins away. And I'm not going to call them the other, you know, the other of another. I'm just going to call them another of the same kind. And they are they're doing it in the community in a different way. And I think as churches, if we would support and encourage each other more, that the body of Christ would be more effective in total in these communities where churches seem to be either at odds or in competition. And I'm not sure which is worse, but I think we just need to get rid of all that. We need to appreciate each other's differences and encourage and affirm and honor and respect.
Well, it's cool that you're leading the way. I think you have a for the community, you have a fairly large church. And it's better for you to lead the way on that than to expect others to come to you, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, right.
And so I think that's a great thing.
I'm happy to do. I mean, it's joyful to do that. It really is.
I love it. I love it. And I love that we get to share these stories and interviews with people like Chad with you, our listeners. If you are running out of stamps, you can go to stamps.com and use our catchphrase. No, I'm just kidding. There's no commercials on this podcast.
Stamps.com/200.
We've had a blast with you. We hope you've had a blast with us, and we'll see you next week on the 200 Churches podcast.
We hope you've been encouraged and inspired by this episode of the 200 Churches podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe at 200churches.com. And to access every one of our hundreds of past episodes, go to 200churches.com/podcast. You can count on us to be back next Wednesday with yet another brand new awesome episode recorded specifically for small church pastors just like you. So until next week, may God bless you as you lead and love the people in your 200 church.
I'm just grateful for your time, Chad. And I think if you were willing to come back and talk specifically just about preaching for the whole time, that'd be very cool. I'd love to hear the kind of things you teach in this class.
Hang on one second, Johnny. Hang on. Johnny, I learned a few things about setup and sound.
There you go. So, you never stop learning.
When would you like to do the in and out?
Do you want to do it tomorrow?
Yeah, let's do it tomorrow.
Okay. Probably tomorrow in the afternoon. Would that be good? Yeah.
Tomorrow's Tuesday.
Yep. I got all staff lunch till 1:30.
Yeah, okay, after that. We'll just do it sometime after that.
Groovy.
So I got to pick up my wife. Man, it's tempting to just come over to your place. I'll see. I'll let you know. I got to pick up Debbie. She's coming in about noon, so we'll work it out.
Okay.
All right.
It was nice to meet you, Chad. Thank you.
You too.